This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Large parts of Sarawak's virgin rainforests have been destroyed by the timber and palm oil industries, including several mega dam projects. Hydroelectric power from these dams, including the infamous Bakun Dam, were planned to be used to develop the state and spur investment in heavy industry. But many locals and activists believe that building of dams destroy not only the environment, but ends up impoverishing local communities. A conservation group that has protested against the building of dams for the past few years is Save River Sarawak. And today, in conjunction with Human Rights Day, which we all just celebrated yesterday, I find out more about their efforts from Chairman Peter Kalang. Welcome, Peter. How are you today?
Thank you, Juliet. I'm great.
Thanks for joining us. So, Peter, you know, we just celebrated Human Rights Day yesterday. And correct me if I'm wrong in saying that I think this is one of the main things being upheld by the Save Rivers Network, you know, upholding the rights of the indigenous communities of Sarawak whose ancestral homes are under threat.
Yeah, that is right. Because what we have been doing these last few years is focus on fighting against the dam. But the dam is not just about the environment, but it's also about the people that live around there who will be displaced because to make way for the dam, mm-hmm. as we have seen in all the previous dams that they have built in Sarawak. So that is what we have been fighting for. We are focused on the environment and human rights issues.
And maybe you can tell me a bit about yourself, Peter. I think I know you are an ethnic Kenya living, and you also live along Sarawak's Baram River, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I'm a Kenya. I'm living at the lower part of the Baram River. I wouldn't have been flooded if the dam was to be built. But anyway, I have a great love for the river. I have a great love for Sarawak as well because we have a lot of indigenous people here from various groups. Mm-hmm. Kenya is a very small group of people, and they live mainly in the Baram and the Blaga area. As we have known that this Blaga is already flooded by the Bakun Dam,
yeah.
And these people are displaced to Sungai Asap. So Baram Dam was going to be flooded again. The Kenya and the Kayan, the Pandan will be affected. The same group of people who are affected by the first dam. So I have a love for the environment and the people who are living in that area. That's why I have been fighting against the dams, not only in the Baram, but all over Sarawak. Because like any other place in the world, I mean, these mega dams normally affect the indigenous people. Mm-hmm. 50,000 mega dams all over the world, and 90% of them affect the livelihood and the people in the indigenous people.
And I mean, you know, as somebody who's lived there, I'm sure you yourself have seen the rapid deforestation, you know, that's been happening in Sarawak, I guess, dating way back to the 80s. How would you describe it, what you've seen happen before your own eyes?
Well, a lot of things have changed. I have seen before, I was born in 50, there's nothing to hide, 1950. So I've seen how Sarawak was a pristine place, you know, where the rivers were clean and we have plentiful of fish. Mm-hmm. And then we have a lot of other, the faunas and floras were not being disturbed by all these extractive industries and all that. Mm-hmm. And I can remember as a child, used to swim in the river and enjoy the place. But now what you see now is a completely different place. You know, the rivers are dirty, murky, and then a lot of siltation. Because of the siltation, it causes a lot of landslide as well, erosions on the bank of the river, mm-hmm. a lot of logs floating. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that our listeners can remember at one time, the highlight, I think it was in 2015, there was a log jam in the Rejang River.
Yes.
It's about more than 10 kilometers of log jam until the boats could not navigate the river. So these are the type of things that are happening. And it's a very bad thing, you know, that shows that what we are doing to the forest, what are we doing to the environment is a complete disregard to the environment, you know, disregard to the well-being of the people who depend on the forest and river as well.
And you know, the indigenous peoples and local communities of Sarawak, they've struggled for decades, I would say, against loggers and, threats from industrial plantations. And now, of course, there's the series of dams. Maybe you can provide me some background on the people with whom you work for and, you know, the kind of threats that they face, you know, from these various different players.
Well, when they first came and do the logging in our area in Baram, I think it's similar to any other parts of Sarawak where they have done logging. Mm-hmm. They told the people that they were going to bring roads for them, going to bring development for them, mm-hmm. all sorts of promises. That is why the people were agreed to allow them to come and do logging there. Yeah. They promised them jobs and things like that, and then scholarship and then other things. But what we see now is we are given these logging roads, which are not roads at all. In fact, they are just means for extracting the timber. It's not for the public. And when they have finished logging, they're left. So a lot of people have fought against this logging, especially our friends, the Penan, the nomadic people of Sarawak, the Penan.
Yep.
They have been fighting against logging, especially in the 80s until now. Mm. And there are people like our famous lawyer, this land right lawyer, Harrison Ngau, who was even arrested, and then he was put in lockup under the Operation Lalang just because he was fighting against logging.
Yeah.
And we have Mutang Ngurut, who is on exile in exile in Canada because he was going to be arrested for the second time, so he escaped to Canada and now he's living there. So these are the type of thing a lot of people. And then recently we had our friend Bill Kayong, who even was killed because he was against land grabbing and logging and all that.
Yeah.
So it's a long history of the people trying to defend their rights and then try to protect the environment, but it just fall on deaf ears from the government. So we are lucky that in Ulu Baram, the interior part of Baram, there is still a small patch of primary jungle left there.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is what we are trying to do in Asap Rivers after we have managed to put the Baram Dam at least on hold. Well, we know they may come back tomorrow, next day. We don't know. Because Adnan has agreed to put a moratorium on the Baram Dam.
Yeah.
So the Penan identified a place in the interior of Baram that they call the Penan Peace Park. So they went to see the late Adnan Satim, our last chief minister.
Yeah.
When he was in London, they went to London because they could not meet him in Kuching. They were not allowed to meet him there. All the people around him stopped them from meeting him. So they took the opportunity, they went to London when he was meeting the Sarawakian who live in London, and then a lot of NGOs went there, including our famous Rucastle, the Sarawak Report.
Claire Rucastle. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Adnan said, oh, this is a very good move. I support this because the state government is really looking at trying to increase the, what do you call this, protected forest in Sarawak.
Yep.
And we'd like to have, you know, the Malaysian government also is talking about sustainable forestry and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what happened. So now, Sap Rivers, after we have stopped fighting against the dam in Baram, we'd like to do, you know, to protect the area and to try to preserve it and try to allow the trees and all that to grow back again. So, but because Adnan said as well that why don't you include the other ethnic groups in Baram, because it's not only the Penans who live there.
Yeah.
So this area that we are looking at is an area of 283,500 hectares of land. And out of that, we have only about 28%, which are primary forests, which the Penan have been, you know, having blockades since the 80s.
Yeah.
And then 23% of that is agricultural land. 49% is degraded forest, that is forest which have been logged and all that.
Yeah.
So we have people actually living in that area. There are 32 villages there. Like what I said, it's not only the Penan, but we now have the Penan, we have the Kelabit, we have the Kenyah,
mm-hmm.
and Papan who are living in that area. So that is what we are doing now, trying to make sure that, you know, that although they stopped the dam, we would like to see that this area is being managed properly, so that we're looking at conservation on the ecosystem and biodiversity. And then we'd like to empower the people so that they can defend their rights and all that without people coming in to help them.
Yeah.
And we want to promote community well-being and livelihood so that they don't depend only on the forest and all that.
Yeah.
And we'd like to see research, education, and cooperation among the people as well, doing a lot of research. And I think that is, I believe that some time ago you have your guest in the your show. It is Dr. Jose Fagoso.
Yes, just a couple of weeks ago, yes.
Yeah, so we invited Jose to come along to do what we call the phase one of this proposal that we're going to have. This is phase one, is doing the consultation of local communities within the protected area and gathering baseline data, ecological and socioeconomics data, development of shared governance and strategies, all these things that we're going to do, phase one. After this is done, and then we would like to see what we will do in order to, you know, to manage the thing. We propose a joint governance of the area, you know, the people, the community, and the government coming in, because we cannot do without the government, because we need them to gazette the area and all the other things.
Yes, of course.
This is what Sap Rivers is doing now. Yeah.
And just speaking about the dam, I mean, yes, you know, you guys, there were so many blockades, you know, which, you know, were taken down by the loggers, forestry officers. There was a lot of conflict going on there. And just for someone who doesn't know, if the dam had been built, how many villages would have been affected? And what's the kind of space that the dam was going to take over?
The dam was, if they had succeeded in building it, it was going to flood an area about 41,000 square kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have affected 36 villages, and then roughly about 20,000 people who are going to be affected by that. So it was going to be, you know, really big, you know, half the size of the island of Singapore. The first dam that, or the second dam that they built, Bakun, was as big as the island of Singapore.
Singapore, yeah.
Yeah, so Baram Dam was going to be half of that. And then with that number of people affected and all that, I cannot see how they can, you know, give land to them, you know, to pay back for the land that they have lost,
drowned
by the water flood and all that. And then how they can, where they would send them, because as far as we know, all the land within Baram area, they are all owned by various other villages, you know. So I think they're going to go into these empty promises that they have practiced in the past, dams.
I'm speaking today to Peter Kalang. He is the chairman of the Save Rivers Network, which is made up of a group of concerned citizens who are building broad-based support to mobilise the public at large to speak up against the plans of the Sarawak State Government to build more new dams. We'll find out more after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. On the line with me from Sarawak today is Peter Kalang. He is the chairman of the Save Rivers Network, which is made up of a group of concerned citizens who have been speaking up against the plans of building more new dams that are destructive to the people and ecosystems of Sarawak. So, Peter, you know, you were telling me about Baram Dam just before the break, and how, you know, even though the late Chief Minister Adnan Satim, he has actually put a moratorium against it, but there are still concerns that might change, right? And I was reading an article, one of the ministers in Sarawak, he actually said, no Baram Dam, no roads, something along those lines. What was that about? Maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
What happened was that when they proposed the Baram Dam, mm-hmm. they also have a budget for roads to go to the dam site. So they have, there were three phases, phase one, phase two, phase three.
Mm-hmm.
So they built the road, and we were aware because this big signboard saying access road ka Tapak Empangan Baram, you know. Mm-hmm. So we knew that the road was going there, but we allowed them to build it until it went to the last stage almost very near to the dam site, and then we had a blockade there, stopped them from building the road. Because if we didn't do that, they would have been a road and they would go ahead and build a dam.
Right.
But in any case, we need the road because Baram is one of the biggest district in perhaps almost as big as Perlis in size.
Okay.
But it is one of the most or the most underdeveloped part of Sarawak. Mm-hmm. And that would qualify it to be the most underdeveloped part of Malaysia. Yeah. So that's why we allow them to build that road. But yeah. So now we stopped them from building the road because we didn't want to build a dam. So we had two blockades for Baram Dam. One against those people who build the road and one on the side of the dam. Those people were trying to do the study on the porosity of the rocks and all that stuff. We chased them out.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a blockade there. But now what the minister, he's our deputy chief minister, one of them, one of the three, James Massing, said that no dam, no road.
Yes.
But the money is already allocated for roads in Baram. Why does it have to be for the dam? That is what the people on the ground are saying. The government is purposely trying to punish the people for rejecting the dam. That's what they're saying. Yeah. Because if the money is allocated for Baram, be it for the dam, be it for the focus of the government should be the people, not the dam. That is the first reason, thing that they're angry about. Second thing is it possible that, because the money now is going to be moved to Balai, where the next dam is going to be built.
Mm-hmm.
Is the government saying that there was no allocation for roads in Balai? That they take the Baram money allocated for Baram to go to Balai.
Mm-hmm.
Just show that the government priority is not the people. The government priority is the dam. So that is what people are angry about. I'm just back from the interview. This is all the talk of the so-called the talk of the town there. Now,
Where are you just back from? Sorry?
I'm just back from a place called Long Liam. This is one of the places which would have been flooded if the dam was going to build. What we are doing there in the interior now, we are part of our baseline study is we try to do alternative energy source for them.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing a micro hydro project there in one village, Tanjung Tepalit. We have done a hybrid system where we tie in the micro hydro with solar system for them. So that is what we are doing. So I'm just back from Long Liam where we launched the next one, which is a micro hydro. So I've been talking to the people in Long Liam. They are very angry about the government saying that. So what they're saying is, okay, no dam, no road, no road, no votes.
Oh dear, okay. And you know, something that you are concerned about, you know, I've read about this in previous interviews, is that how your culture, your land, you know, they're being impacted by government officials who completely disregard your traditional values and Indigenous knowledge. And I think it was the IUCN Director General Inga Anderson who called Indigenous people the key stewards of the world's biodiversity. But, you know, they still often struggle to be heard and understood. Would you say this is still a problem faced by the Indigenous peoples and local communities in Sarawak?
Absolutely. Because let's take, for example, this the hot topic in Sarawak now.
Mm.
That is about the Native Customary Right Land, NCR.
Yes.
See, what are they talking about, NCR? Because the law is there. I mean, they have written documents that prove that NCR is something that exists. But the interpretation of NCR by the government is different than what the indigenous people have been practicing all this, you know,
mm-hmm.
all their life. You know?
Yeah.
So NCR, as far as the indigenous people are concerned, includes what they call the Pulau Galau and Pemakai Manua. That basically means the territorial domain of the people. In other words, every village has a boundary so that it shows the next village boundary is right on that. You know, there is no space in between the villages and the world. Yeah, the government said no. We noticed that whatever is cultivated after 1958 mm-hmm. is considered as customary right land or NCR. But whatever is virgin forest is considered as state land. So that's what the people are angry about, and that's why we have a lot of this problem. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had a big rally in Kuching. People from the deep interior of Sarawak came and rallied there to voice out because we have been losing a lot of court cases now because the government does not recognize this. And of course, what the natives say about Pulau Galau is an area which they purposely do not cut. They do not lock. They do not do any farming there because it is a place where they keep so that they can have their rotans there or this non-timber product there so that they can have protein, source of the protein there, fish and animals and all that. Mm-hmm. They purposely don't touch those areas. But the government have given it out for logging. The government have given it out for oil palm plantation and tree plantation and all that. So this is if you leave it to the indigenous people, they are looking after the biodiversity. You know, the government is destroyed that.
And I mean, you know, one of our biggest challenges now is climate change. And, you know, with all this deforestation that is, well, just not helping the situation at all, is it? And you've said before that, you know, in order to be called sustainable, I mean, I think people are not against development, but it must be sustainable and it must be environmentally and socially friendly. And you've said before, you know, the well-being of the people or the human rights issues must be prioritized when planning for any development. You also mentioned, you know, Bakun, Murum and Batang Ai are not good examples. What were some of the failures there as far as you were concerned?
If you look at what does it mean by, what do you mean by sustainable? According to the United Nations description of it, sustainable comes under three different things. The first one is on the environment, and second one is on the economy of the people, mm-hmm. and then the third one is on the social side or the culture of the people and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you look at what they are doing now, you know, they are not sustainable at all. It's, what they are doing is they're trying to get as much as possible in the shortest time as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like this story about this goose with the golden egg. You know, they are doing that. They're trying to get us. In fact, all this area that we're talking about, the Baram Eco Community Forest that we're trying to do in the interior of Baram, they're all given out already for logging. And some of these logging licenses are valid until the year 2025. So if we wait until 2025, there is no virgin forest left in Sarawak.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. So the way they're doing things is not sustainable at all. And of course, all this logging that is going on, all that, what you call this oil palm plantation that is going on, mm-hmm. is not, as far as the economy of the people is concerned, it doesn't have anything to do with them at all. The only thing they're left with is all this empty oil drum and old tires that these people dump around, and then all the beer cans and all that. That is what the people are left with. Right. Because when the logs is gone, they will abandon the road. There's no maintenance, and the people will again go back to square one. So where is trying to look after the environment, trying to look after the economy of the people, and the adat of the people, they call it here in Sarawak, the native people, the tradition and all that. You know, that is a social side of it.
And, you know, I mean, going back to the construction of the dams, for example, you know, the river is, if I'm not mistaken, very much related to the way of life of the indigenous peoples and local communities of Sarawak. And to not consult you guys, to speak to you about how it should be done, that is just, well, it's just not right, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Because what you see now, I mean, the people, especially the group of indigenous people in Sarawak, yeah, that we call the Orang Ulu, mm-hmm. the Orang Ulu normally live along the riverbank. You know, some of the ethnic group are even called after their name after the river. Like my group, we are called Long Olai, mm-hmm. because we used to live when we came from wherever it was. I think we came from the mountain before in the Usun Apau. We end up in a place called Long Olai. So our dialect is called Long Olai.
Okay.
You see? And then, so we have a lot of other dialects as well, Long Blokon, Long Sepatu, and all that. Mm-hmm. And then the river is a source of protein for us, and the river provides us transport. We do boats and all that. It's very much in our culture, the river. So when they start to do the dam, and then the river, of course, the dam will affect the fish because the river will be, the temperature of the river is affected. And then, of course, a lot of turbidity in the river, a lot of what you call mud and all these things in the river and all that.
Yeah.
Then, of course, some of the fish that do spawning, like we call it ikan semah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You have them, they cannot do spawning anymore. That's the end of that species. So it really affects the whole life system of the people who depend on the river as well. Of course, the river, damming the river will affect the water table inside the soil. When the water table is low, because the water downstream of the dam is down low, and then it will cause a lot of erosion on the riverbank. That is what we see now happening. Mm-hmm. And of course, this water that is discharged from the dam, the quality is different because of all these organic materials that is decaying there, a lot of other chemical inside there as well. So the people living below, who living downstream of the dam, they will be drinking this water. They will be taking this for their bathing and all this other stuff. So we have seen a lot of this type of thing. We have gone and talked to people. They complain about skin, the disease, and all this other thing. So it really affects the livelihood and the health and all this other thing.
So you mentioned some of the projects that you're currently working on. Safe River Sarawak's currently working on. But I think you're doing a lot more community projects to train and to help Indigenous peoples and local communities of Sarawak, you know, to know more about their rights and things like that. Maybe you could tell us about some of those things that you're working on.
Yeah, we do a lot of training. We don't do it ourselves, of course. We get people who are expert in this. Mm-hmm. For example, we bring in lawyers to talk about the land right issue to them. We have conducted a lot of this training to tell them what is the law like, what does the Malaysian Constitution say, on the people are allowed to have properties, they are allowed to have homes, they are allowed to have land, all that. The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous People, the UNDRIP, mm-hmm. that also spell out clearly there the rights of Indigenous people. That is, you know, UNDRIP, Malaysia is a co-signatory for the UNDRIP, you know, but they don't respect it. We also do training on paralegal training because we have a lot of cases where the police trying to bully the people, trying to threaten them and all that. So we train the people what their rights and all that, and when they get arrested, what they can and they cannot do and all these things. Mm-hmm. And we also do a lot of road shows, you know, on our own, try to tell them what happened in other dams and what are the impact of dams on themselves, on the economy and all that. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of cross-visit. We bring people who are affected by the dams to visit the villages that could be flooded by dams, and then vice versa. We also go out to other countries. Earlier this year, in May, I was in Kelimantan, Indonesia, mm-hmm. where they have a place, they call it Gunung Pulung National Park. Mm-hmm. Gunung Pulung National Park is an area which is protected by the government. But what happened is the local people there, they go and start to lock the trees there, they sell it. And then there was a researcher who was there, who was doing research on the orangutan in Gunung Pulung. Mm-hmm. And then she went around and talk to the people what they would do, you know, in order to stop them from cutting the trees. Because they were cutting the trees, a lot of them cutting it to pay for the medical fees and all that. Because Gunung Pulung is quite far from the town, so they have to pay for the passage. It's quite far. If you go from Pontianak, I went there from Pontianak to Gunung Pulung by boat. This is express boat, speed boat, 100 horsepower speed boat.
Okay.
It takes you 5 hours by boat. Wow. Yeah, it's a long, long journey. So these people have to pay for this, you know. That's why they have to go and cut the tree.
So it's just survival, isn't it?
Yeah. So researcher went back to the States and she did a degree and become a doctor and came back. And she started a project there. She started a hospital. This hospital is you don't have to pay money to get treatment there, but you can get a treatment by paying it with three seedling.
Yes.
You can pay it by giving compost material, just like cow dungs and all this stuff.
Renewable energy, yes.
And then you can pay it with handicraft and things like that.
Right.
So I was really, really impressed with what they're doing there. They have their own nursery where they try to replant, and then they're organic farming and all that. So we brought our people there to see, you know, that this is what they can do, you know, because the government is telling you only that there's only one way to do this thing, but there's so many ways. Like what they said, there are 9 ways to skin a cat.
Yes. So, I mean, and that's great. I guess you're getting all the communities involved, you know, and like you said, you know, just showing them that there are so many alternatives out there. We just need to find them and to implement them.
Yes, exactly. Even this power source they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So in Baram, we have a lot of small stream. We can have micro hydro, and then we have a lot of sun, and then we can have, you know, solar system, things like that, you know. But the government is saying, you know, we can only have power when we do the mega dams. But at the moment, we have excess power, and the dams are not supplying all these places where they don't have any electrical power, like in the interior and all that.
Exactly. The people who were displaced are not actually getting the aid that is supposed to come from these dams, right?
No, they are not. Because I can tell you, next door to the dam in Bakun, we have a village called Longbangan. They don't have any power from the dam. They're still using their own diesel generator. You have Majawa there, nothing. Longbala there, nothing. They're very near to the dam. In fact, in some of these villages, you can smell the stink from the decay of this organic material from the reservoir there.
Oh, dear. So, Peter, I guess, you know, how are you moving forward with Safe Rivers? Like I said, you know, there's a network of you guys. So how are you just going to keep going forward? Are there many more dams in the works? Is that something that you're going to continue fighting?
Yeah, the latest we heard is, of course, this in Sarawak, as far as Sarawak is concerned, the Baleh Dam is going. Mm-hmm. They haven't actually started construction, but the road is going, and then they said they're going to start the construction of the dam next year.
Okay.
But recently, our new chief minister, Abang Joe, announced dams to be done in Terusan and Ulu. Yeah, these dams. That came as a shock to us, because if you remember what Adnan said before, he said that no more mega dams.
Yeah.
We are going to look at micro dams and alternative energy. But we are surprised to hear what Abang Joe just said recently. And we are looking at working together with other people affected by the dams as well. And let's see whether we can work with these people from Sabah, because a lot of people are affected by the dams there as well.
Okay.
And of course, in Semenanjung, Malaysia, the orang asli.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are people there who are crying for help. Their voice are not heard. Yeah, so we try to share with them what we have learned from our experience. Yeah.
Okay. And if anyone listening would like to get in touch or would like to help, maybe to offer, like you said, training programs and things like that for the communities, how can we do that? How can we get in touch with you?
We have Facebook. At the moment, our website is still in the work.
Mm-hmm.
We have Facebook. You can write to us from the Facebook, Safe Rivers, just Safe Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
It's one word, Safe Rivers.
All right.
And then you can write to us as well, Safe Rivers Net, Safe Rivers NET, one word,
mm-hmm.
@gmail.com.
@gmail.com, yeah. Okay.
Probably by next year, we will have our own website. We're still working on it.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much, Peter, for joining me today. And, you know, you obviously are a wonderful example of a human rights defender. And good luck and, you know, continue doing the wonderful work that you're doing.
Thank you very much, Juliet. Thank you for interviewing me as well.
I've been speaking to Peter Kalang. He's the chairman of the Safe Rivers Network. And we've been discussing the work that they do, which is building broad-based support to mobilize the public at large to speak up against plans of building more new dams that are destructive to the people and ecosystems in Sarawak in particular. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.